Introduction. I was brought up by my mother on the Bible, and she told me something that I've never forgotten. She said the stories in the Bible are stories about the conflict between the kings who have power and the prophets who preach righteousness, and she taught me to support the prophets and not the kings. Tony Benn, former British Member of Parliament, March the 10th, 2006. I am writing this book because I have to, and because I know a confrontation is coming. No longer can I maintain the old uneasy coexistence with false authority, lamenting his folly and fraud, deploring his ignorance, and ridiculing his absurdities, but all from a safe distance. No, I am on a collision course with false authority, and I dare say you are too. We need to be prepared. I have lived and worked on four continents, swum in three oceans, heard innumerable foreign tongues, and observed the infinite variety of our species. But now the autocrats, bureaucrats, and technocrats, in their little, brief, and fear-fueled authority, would have us undergo invasive medical procedures and hand over private medical information once held sacred just to travel, to go about our lives, and even to make a living. Time was when I could grudgingly accept mask requirements in the early days, frown at destructive lockdowns, and ignore voicemails and messages to my mobile phone from Britain's National Health Service, NHS, and I could largely dismiss the barrage of fear-mongering propaganda that managed to circumvent my long-standing aversion to mainstream media. But when government started threatening and penalizing bodily autonomy, a line was crossed. I know in my heart that these measures are an atrocity, and my spirit rebels against them. But just having that instinct is not enough now. What are my rights? I'm going to need more than mere disgust if I am to overrule the fear-mongering autocrats who will exploit any emergency to unleash tyranny. I'm going to need constitutional armor and weapons of law, and I'm going to need them quickly. And when I have them, I will share them with those who may benefit. Hence this book, a garment of protection for the COVID era, and an antidote to fear. I don't mean fear of a disease, but of the reactions, or rather overreactions to it. Though I once entertained some background anxiety about a supposed virus, it is nothing compared to the deep dread I've experienced about a totalitarian state emerging, such as Orwell set out in 1984. I've also come to realize that even that kind of fear is being stoked by governments. At the outset, they wanted us to fear COVID. But after that got them only so far, now they want us to fear them, so that we won't make trouble. For that type of fear, I recall the predicament of Moses' Israelites lately released from slavery in Egypt, as recounted in the Bible book of Exodus. Imagine their terror to realize Pharaoh's entire army was bearing down on them as they approached the Red Sea, 14:10. But Moses told them not to fear, to stand firm, for they would see the Lord's deliverance. And they did, when the Red Sea drowned Pharaoh and his horde. 14:28. Therefore, no matter how bad things appear to get, the final chapter of our story sees the demise of slavery on earth, including wage slavery, debt slavery, tax slavery, prison slavery, sex slavery, digital slavery, and of course medical slavery, along with the deaths of tyrant politicians, bureaucrats, and corporate profiteers, when, like a mighty river, justice returns. The vaccines, too, have an obvious allegory in the Exodus story. When Moses and his brother Aaron come to Pharaoh's court and issue their demands, Aaron demonstrates the power of God by turning his staff into a snake. Pharaoh's conjurers imitate the act, but Aaron's snake eats their snakes. 7:12. Similarly, the fanged creatures of Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson are no match for the lethal bite of truth-tellers, prophets, and whistleblowers today. also destined for destruction are the media organizations who have mouthpieced for the medical-industrial complex. I shudder to recall the Daily Telegraph front page headline of July the 21st, 2021. Freedom for double jabbed as UK opens to world. As if freedom can be granted or withheld at official whim. As if medical status were the qualification to receive it. No, we are born with it. And trying to take it away from us is blasphemy. No less an atrocity than the interscission of Philip Pullman's novel The Golden Compass, where the authorities cut children away from their daemon animals, equivalent to extracting their souls. The Telegraph also predicted, in a July 2021 article, the unvaccinated will be shut out of normal life, progressively demonized, and stripped of civil rights. And other mainstream outlets salivated at the prospect. As 2021 drew to a close, a quick glance at recent headlines showed an almost desperate eagerness to foment hatred against a vilified underclass. "The unvaccinated are putting us all at risk," squealed the Times of London. "I'm furious at the unvaccinated," howled the New York Times. "It is only a matter of time before we turn on the unvaccinated," thundered the Guardian. Just like the cultist politicians and bureaucrats, these media mercenaries for Big Pharma know not what they say or what they do. Nor do they know or care that international law defines persecution against an identifiable group as a crime against humanity. Have all these puppets learned nothing from history and the madness of going after a targeted minority? Has it taken but a few generations to overturn what our ancestors fought and died for? Have these people lost their minds? I think they have. We of prophetic calling have our work cut out for us. Not just seeing or warning against future scenarios, as exemplified by Orwell, but in describing the present. That means observing the obvious and stating the obvious when populations are conditioned to overlook the obvious, to deny it to themselves, and even if they do see it, to keep quiet about it. As famed whistleblower Edward Snowden observes, "Everywhere we look, from Afghanistan to economics, from pandemic to pervasive surveillance, the obvious has been made unspeakable." And it is obvious that our medical-industrial complex, taking its playbook from the military-industrial complex, grooms politicians to do its bidding. It also likens the COVID response to war, reflecting the imperial and imperious mindset infecting our politics, with words like battle, beat, conquer, crush, defeat, eliminate, enemy, fight, front lines, victory, etc. There is a war being waged, certainly, but of a very different kind, as encapsulated by the Apostle Paul in the New Testament. "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." Ephesians 6:12. And those spiritual forces are especially murderous towards children, recalling the ancient abomination of child sacrifice to Moloch. "The Lord said to Moses, 'Say to the Israelites, any Israelite or any foreigner residing in Israel who sacrifices any of his children to Moloch is to be put to death. The members of the community are to stone him. I myself will set my face against him and will cut him off from his people. For by sacrificing his children to Moloch, he has defiled my sanctuary and profaned my holy name. If the members of the community close their eyes when that man sacrifices one of his children to Moloch, and if they fail to put him to death, I myself will set my face against him and his family and will cut them off from their people, together with all who follow him in prostituting themselves to Moloch.'" Leviticus 20:1-5. Of course, fraud, corruption, and greed have always greased the wheels of government. But now we observe something far deadlier, A medical cult that demands human sacrifice. A religion of death, served by a conclave of tyrant priests in positions of false authority. The more they can kill, the higher they rise in their infernal ranks. I wish the figureheads of our so-called medical freedom movement would see this. I wish they would realize that the pharmaceutical complex is not so much counting the dollars as it is counting the bodies. I came to this realization when hearing renowned liver health specialist and author Dr. Bert Berkson tell Dr. Jonathan Landsman in an interview, "At many medical schools, in many university hospitals, they give an award every month to the doctor who has the most deaths on his service, and they have a party, and is called a Black Crow Award." Is that what this is all about? Are we in the middle of a global Black Crow Award now, in which medical professionals and hospitals and so-called health ministers are competing to see who can add the most corpses to the pile of medical waste, or have they been assigned kill quotas? That medical freedom leaders overlook this deeper motivation is disappointing, but many more errors, and possibly fatal ones, they make besides. Most dangerous of all is to base their opposition to medical compulsion not on the solid ground that it is eternally unlawful, but on the shifting sands of data and statistics. For example, they argue that this disease or that variant is too mild to warrant medical enforcements. Meaning what? That if some more deadly disease were conjured, they'd be fine with coercion? That is boggy ground to build on, to paraphrase Herman Melville. Of course, autocrats are always ready to unleash another emergency, which they will cite as pretext for more crackdowns and despotic legislation that they falsely call law. We also hear the Medical Freedom Caucus arguing certain measures should not be mandated because they are unproven, unsafe, or ineffective, or because natural immunity is a thing, or asymptomatic spread is not a thing. Fools! There is no because. No medical measure can ever be compulsory, period, end of story, whatever claims are asserted for its safety or effectiveness. And here's the stupidest slogan of all. Where there is risk, there must be choice. Meaning what? That if some medical treatment is concocted and safety claimed for it, then choice can be taken away? Misguided, too, are requests for exemption from medical enforcement. These buy into a fiction that government has authority to demand anything from us in the first place. It doesn't. Quite the opposite. We have authority over government. And the word no is, always has been, and always will be, exemption enough. Exemption requests also desecrate medical confidentiality. When your medical status is nobody else's business in the first place, it is not the government's business, not your employer's business, not a travel company's business, and not your neighbor's business. Respect confidentiality, and your medical status can never be weaponized against you. Our resolve against medical dictatorship, therefore, can never rest on competing views about today's data and circumstances, but must instead be anchored in constitutionality. Blind to emergency by design, constitutional principles are eternal and can't be swayed by the shifting currents of perception and statistics. They don't give a fuck about conditions on the ground, and nor should they. No, these times call us to be constitutional extremists. Lawyers, too, need to grasp this. They whimper about not being able to go after pharmaceutical companies, doctors, hospitals, or regulators because of legal immunity. Servile creatures, I rebuke your compliance with tyrant fiction spun to enslave mankind. The acts and statutes you cite, and stop calling them laws. These licenses to kill are nothing more than corporate contracts that one party has drafted, one party has signed, and one party has negotiated with itself. Yet that party thinks to impose those contracts on another party, us, to codify enslavement, murder, extortion, destruction, and theft, and then to pardon itself of the crimes. As we shall see in the coming section on common law, these instruments are powerless without our signature and not worth the air they're written on. Imagine you were a business owner seeking to procure goods from a supplier, but that supplier gets to write the contract without your review, and that contract binds you as soon as the ink is dry without your knowledge, signature, or consent. You'd tell them to get lost, wouldn't you? Yet that is precisely the bargain that governments and their corporate conspirators think to impose, and before which our conditioned cadre of cringing lawyers think to kneel. When will you stop enthroning legislation over justice? One rare exception to this tendency is British human rights lawyer Anna de Buisere. Interviewed in London's Parliament Square during a Medical Freedom March of October the 30th, 2021, she advises, "Learn what your fundamental, inalienable human rights are. Anyone who can access Google, you Google the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Read it. Read the European Convention on Human Rights. Read the UK Human Rights Act. Read the International Covenant on Social and Political and Economic Rights. Those rights are all there. It's all there in the law. The reason this is happening is because people don't know the law, so they don't know how to uphold it and assert it." I applaud the spirit of her words, though that's an awful lot of homework for your average freedom-loving reader to do, especially if you add in the 170-page notice of liability prepared by de Buisere and her allies in Lawyers for Liberty to serve against skin piercers and their accomplices. But I have done the homework and distilled into this book the key language that empowers us. The good news is that none of this is complicated. It doesn't require a law degree nor a thorough grounding in Latin. The beauty of these universal principles lies in their plain English simplicity, and like the proverbial mustard seed of faith that overthrows mountains, our little understanding in this arena goes a long way in vaulting the pronouncements of foolish and fearful men. A layman's expertise will do, and a layman's analysis can provide it, which is why I am as qualified as anyone else to do so here. Brothers and sisters, it is time to release from their glass cabinets the dusty scrolls of our rights declarations. We reclaim the keys that unleash them, and, like the true prophets of old, proclaim them again to break the spells and incantations of false priests now roaming the earth. Our rights being inalienable, or unalienable if you prefer, were never granted by a gift of government, nor rescinded by a denial of government. In the words of John K. Webster, creator of the documentary Straw Man, "Government is a creation of man, and a creation of man can never be above man." So if governments will not hear or heed the simple and time-honored constitutional principles they are sworn to uphold, then each of us must acquire at least a little expertise in this area. Nor will I pin my hopes on a political party or candidate to produce a regime a little less vindictive than the last. Love for our rights straddles the old divides, where antagonists are merely co-conspirators in bipartisan acts of theft. As Martin Luther wrote of the Papists and Anabaptists in 1531, "These foxes are tied together by the tails, even though their heads look in opposite directions. While they outwardly profess to be great enemies, inwardly they think, teach, and defend one and the same thing." Once we realize this and expose the unholy alliances against our core values, whether by Democrat with Republican, Tory with Labour, or by any other duopoly or coalition, we can be rid of this corrupt political theatre altogether. We are in a Declaration of Independence moment, when an entire form of government, not just a faction within government, is destroying life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is therefore our duty now to abolish this form of government, maybe even the entire idea of government, which means mind control. We are not fighting in a horizontal plane of left versus right, but in the vertical plane of life over death, creation over destruction, love over fear. That is a spiritual battle, the battle for which this book is conceived. May this declaration in words empower us to suit the action to the word to the action, as we hear and heed the rallying call from the captain of our souls, he whose word is alive and active and sharper than any double-edged sword. Hebrews 4:12. Similarly, the sword of constitutional truth now pulses with heaven's call for justice, imparting courage to those who wield it, and thirsts for the blood of today's cabal of thieves and murderers, whether in government, media, or any other organization. Let us pursue them with the kind of fury that Elijah wielded in slaughtering the false prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, 1 Kings 18:40. For, as Dave Mason writes in his masterful Age of Prophecy novels, set in the time of Elijah, those who show mercy to the cruel bring cruelty upon the merciful. For those of us contemplating our first run-in with would-be enforcers such as police, the task ahead may appear daunting. But here I share the vital information we will need if menaced by state or corporation. And if you have a paperback version, I hope it shall become marked up with your highlights and scribblings. Our quest may seem to present impossible odds. Well, you would have said the same of Moses and Aaron going up against Pharaoh, his court, his paymasters, slave masters, chariots and weaponry. But he who is in the prophets was greater than he who was in Pharaoh, and he who is in us now is greater than he who is in the autocrats, bureaucrats, technocrats and psychocrats of our age, and, oh yes, the philanthrocrats too. Hold the line, stand your ground, uphold the rule of law, step into your sovereignty. De Buisere urges in the closing moments of her Parliament Square interview, the law is all there to protect you, but you're not going to get protected unless you know what it is and you uphold it. Therefore, we look to the eternal values of mankind, values not swayed by political convenience and expediency, nor by profiteering motives, and that have more currency, not less, during times of emergency, whether that emergency is real or perceived or invented. So, join me in the field, my friend. These times will make profits of us all. Abdiel Leroy.